Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated. Visit MySpecialMortgage.com. That's MySpecialMortgage.com.
104.3 The Fan presents Big Al and D-Mac with a big story of the day.
Big story of the day is it's football Friday. We got the fire up coming up at 5 o'clock. I mean, everybody's in a good mood, but I just want to start because I think the big story of the day, if you give me a second, ties in with the cover of my Sports Illustrated. So I love Sports Illustrated. Been getting it since I was 12 years old. Probably should read it a little bit more than I do, but I get it anyway. It's just part of my life. And on the cover of Sports Illustrated is a picture of Miles Sanders, who's from Penn State, and you look behind him, what do you see? You see crowds, you see people with their chest painted, everybody's going nuts. It's a touchdown for Penn State, and the title is College Football Equals Fun Football. It's lit. Then you open up the Sports Illustrated itself, and you go to the article and said, oh, well, this is probably going to be an article about how great college football is. Let me just read you the opening paragraph. No doubt the offseason is a slog for players, weight room, summer practices, and for fans. The scandals have got to stop. Then the game's beginning to hit you. Damn, college football is fun. Experimental coaches, renewed rivalries, larger-than-life freshmen. The ancient game always finds a new way to keep us hooked. This feels right, and it's Michigan lined up with Notre Dame. And who is the quarterback for Michigan in that picture in Sports Illustrated? Dylan McCaffrey.
A little McCaffrey in there.
How about that? Kid you knew when he was like 2 years old.
Right.
Right there, under center for Michigan, about how awesome college football is. And then you leaf, which is a cool moment right there, because he didn't play the whole game. It was more Shea Patterson, but it just so happens for the picture in Sports Illustrated, it's Dylan McCaffrey. So finally something good has happened for Ed and Lisa. And then the article itself just more or less tells you about how incredible and how fun college football is. And they kind of center on the Notre Dame Michigan game, but they go through a bunch of other stuff too, and they talk about a new player for USC, and they're going through Clemson and the quarterbacks and blah 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 blah. I bring this up, Al, because they're right. College football is fun. It's exciting. I mean, it's got plenty of warts, and they acknowledge
that. Welcome, man. You just gave me chills. Welcome to it.
Right.
Welcome to it.
Now, you still got to get over a lot of things that just aren't right. The kids should be getting compensated. There's no real national championship. You probably don't have enough teams in a bowl. You probably should have more teams that could actually win in college football than really can. But at the end of the day, there's more scenes like this with college football that are fun, and I want to juxtapose that with what we saw last night. A rain delay that took a broadcast from, I don't know, it started at what, 7 o'clock our time, 9 o'clock East Coast, a game that was tragically boring in the first half, that wasn't played all that well, wasn't very creative, and just kind of was
and poorly officiated.
Terrible. Slow, terribly officiated, dumb. How dumb are you in special teams units in the NFL? I mean, how dumb are you? And then you get to the end of the game, and yeah, the end of the game was kind of exciting, but exactly who was watching? It's fine for us out here in the mountain time zone. It's okay for us for a sporting event to end at 10 o'clock at night, but who in the world is watching that back on the East Coast? You know, where there's cities like New York, Boston, Washington, Miami, some big cities back in the Detroit's in the Eastern time zone. Philadelphia is in the Eastern time zone, as is Atlanta. So even if you were a fan of those teams, you had to be losing some viewership. So I asked Big Sexy, I go, hey, man, what were the ratings? And Big Sexy hit me with the truth. They have had, this was the lowest rated NFL home opener game in 9 years. Rightfully so. It didn't start on time. When it did start, there were penalties left and right. The play was slow. And it was just bad football. It wasn't exciting. It wasn't imaginative. It was cautious. It was boring. and it was ugly. Now, if you're a fan of Philadelphia or Atlanta, you don't care. You don't care how things are nationally, especially Philadelphia. Hey, if you're Philadelphia, you had goal line stops. You had a backup quarterback who won you an MVP, essentially win the game while Carson Wentz was on the, you know, wasn't playing. If you're a Philadelphia fan, you're 1-0 and it's EAGLES. Everybody's excited. But the truth of the matter is that game was awful last night. Awful. Nobody cares about my fantasy team, but let me tell you, in the Fan Fantasy League, as I'm playing newbie John Davis, well, he's got Matt Ryan. I have the Eagles defense. In my fantasy football league, the Eagles defense got more points than a quarterback. That should never happen, Alfred. I mean, ever. Last night was like the worst nightmare that you can imagine.
Yes, it was. Can't believe you opened a show like that because it's the same conversation that I had with Big Sexy.
I think America's having that conversation
this morning.
Today.
Like, what was that? Why did I stay up for that? And then we get to the end of the game, and Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons, can't draw up nothing but go routes from the 10-yard line. He got four shots from the 10-yard line to win a game, and then when you look back at it, they basically ran the same plays every time. No creativity, no nothing. It was the most vanilla ending of a game. I was frustrated all the way through.
Oh, the end of the game was kind of exciting. You have four shots from line to win it.
It wasn't the team that I had to win, so
struggling.
I was frustrated there. But I couldn't believe how badly officiated the game was. It was a problem. It was like 28 penalties last night. It was ugly. It was not the way it's supposed to be. And because of it, it makes football look crappy at the NFL level. It really does. And that's not the way that football is played. And we all understand
and
know
that. It doesn't have to be played like
that. We all understand and know that that Eagles team is one of the most exciting teams in all of football. Their offenses are both, you know, high-powered offenses, and the referees got a few calls wrong. We had some rookie referees in there last night that had some impactful plays. It was bad.
Worse than
being. But I watched every last minute of it.
I started watching it, and I just felt myself drifting. Drifting to my phone, drifting to just other things. The game was on. Like, the game was on, but I was just drifting. And I felt myself like, oh, man, I wish the Rockies were playing right now. Now, granted, once it comes time for the Broncos to play, who cares? The game could be the worst game in the world, and we're going to watch every single second of it and cheer for the Broncos and hope for them to win. And, you know, but if you want to be objective and honest about it, you know.
That was not the way it's supposed to
yikes.
Look. I mean, we're talking about two of the highest-powered offenses in all of football. And last night we had a score of 18-12. I mean, it was just
guess who Nick Foles looked like?
Nick Foles.
He looked like Nick Foles. However, that being said, they didn't run the Philly special, Philly. They actually ran the Patriots play that didn't work in the Super Bowl, and that sort of brought life to everything.
Hey, let me tell you something. This is wicked awful, all right?
The one moment of that game that got exciting is when they tried a trick play.
When they try, I'm not going to call it trick plays, because when they run those type of plays, they work. You know, if you
so
want
why
to call
not
them a
run
trick
them,
play.
I won't call them a trick play. Why don't you run plays like that more often?
They did. They ran an unbalanced line and got great yardage on it, and then they came back and ran the unbalanced line and got a touchdown on it. That's innovative. That is high school football. That is college football. That's not the NFL what we saw out the Eagles last night.
It sparked them to the win. That play sparked them to the win at the end of the day. It got them going offensively. It led to a touchdown. It ultimately, it helped them a lot. But still, 18-12, with a game that was rain and lightning delayed, a game that didn't finish till after midnight East Coast time. Got to do better than that, NFL. Got to do better than that. Now, still.
Well, we had a conversation yesterday off air, but it was on Facebook Live, and you can join us every day on Facebook Live as we talk about some of the more interesting parts of our lives. And last night on Facebook Live, we had a conversation about how dumb it is that teams in the NFL don't build new stadiums with domes. And the fact that we here in Denver have built a stadium without a dome is dumb, too. And that was 20 years ago, and I was like, that should be a dome.
Should have been.
20 years ago. Has it been 20 now? Has it been a total of 20 now? Close to.
Close to it, yeah.
And I was saying then, it should be a dome. It should be a dome, a retractable roof dome, but it would have added something, you know, $100 million to the project. But think about all the usage that we would have been able to get out of that stadium in months that we can't really get usage out of it. I mean, we're talking about one football game and possibly two football games in January, and then we don't see that stadium being used for football again until, you know, the next August. I mean, if the city is expected to chip in to help build the stadium and they want a partner from the city, then the city has to get more usage out of that stadium. If we ever do another stadium, you know, anytime soon, we have to have a dome stadium. It just does not make sense. And we talked about last night the fact that the Minnesota Vikings could have played outdoors. They could have played outdoors. But the one thing that we learned when we went to Minnesota is that Minnesota has gotten almost 270 days of events out of that dome since it's been there. That is far superior than we could do here in Denver or any other city that has snow out in the winter. So Philly built a new stadium, didn't do a dome. Denver built a new stadium, didn't do a dome. Hey, man, if you're going to build a stadium, do a dome, because nobody wants to sit outside when it's raining. Nobody wants to sit outside when it's snowing. And I know it's great that we have these epic games where you can see guys like LeSean McCoy running 3 feet of snow as it's snowing in Buffalo. But in all reality, to be comfortable in today's world, we need to have 65 degrees, man. 65 degrees. You can tell me, don't tell me that's football weather either. Because if you've never played in any kind of weather like that, if you would have played in weather like that, you would have known that that's not the optimal weather to play football in. I don't like it. If you build a stadium, build a dome. By the way, in Los Angeles, where they're building a new stadium, where the average temperature is around 76 degrees every day of the year, they're building a dome. They want to use it just in case, you know, it's going to rain. So there you go.
Okay. Did you pick Washington or Philadelphia? Philadelphia or Atlanta?
Atlanta.
So thanks a lot. You screwed us over on that one, too.
It's the same reason why I'm picking the Broncos. Crazy stuff happens on opening days for the home team.
I did blow it.
That being said, the first 2 weeks is not an indictment of how teams are going to be. What we're talking about more is just the presentation of football itself.
It was supposed to be our shining moment.
I have no doubts that Atlanta and Philadelphia will both get better, and I'm not drawing any conclusions on either of those two teams based on last night. Zero. It's more a problem with football overall. Got to watch out for. But that being said, I bet you anything, the ratings in Philadelphia were great. I bet you the ratings in Atlanta were great. But we've had a lot of other things going on in the world of football. We've had a lot of other things going on in the world of football, and it's having an impact, for sure. Just got to be careful out there, you know. It's a great game. And you know, football is one thing. The NFL is a form of football. It's not the only form of football. You know, the concept of football, Al, is pretty cool, right? And you'll see stuff over this weekend, and I'm excited about CU Nebraska. I think,
dude,
that's awesome.
I am going to be glued to the television. Are you kidding me? I got the thing set already on DVR. I'm ready to go. I don't want to miss a moment of that game. You know what? Won't be able to see the start of it. Don't want to hear about it either. Don't want to hear about the start of the game. Don't want to hear about the scores. I want to watch it from the beginning of the game, and I want to be absolutely thrilled. And I don't want anybody to help me out and say, "Oh, do you see the game?" No. You know, I'm going to be one of those guys, and I know every sports fan out there has been like that at some moment in their life. I remember, D-Mac, you in particular, when you were a huge Tiger Woods fan, did not want to see any parts of the match that he was involved in until you could see the whole thing from start to finish. I'm going to be like that this week, and because I don't want to watch it on my phone. I'm gonna watch it on my Xfinity cable, and I'm going to enjoy myself with my family. I got my kids coming over. We've made the date and the time to watch the game a little different than the national televised time, but we're watching it all. You kidding me, man? This is it. Love college football. Love it, man. Love it. It feels like every time I see a college football game, like I know that kid now. And like, oh, he reminds me of this guy. Oh, look at him. I remember that move. Somebody else did that. That's when I see college football now. That's what I see. And last night, you know, the referees officiated the game like it was a preseason game. I can guarantee you, with the commissioner of the NFL in the stands, the referee group today had a talk to. Guaranteed that who's ever over officiating in all of the NFL got a real conference call together today to talk about, hey, we can't do that.
By the way, was there any in particular call that you didn't like?
Oh, my goodness, man. The Julio Jones catch on the sideline, 52 yards down the field, had the ball, caught it, trapped it. And what was crazy is that Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth and the official who was in the booth said that it was a catch. And the referee said, no catch, went to review and said, no catch. DMAC, it's got to be centralized. It's got to go
it
like.
Is. It is centralized.
No, it's not.
Is it? It is. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Is it in like one place like New York now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't believe they got it. I can't believe they got that wrong. It takes a huge, it takes a huge act for the play to be overcalled. That's what was talked about in the broadcast last night, that now in the matchups for the play to be overcalled, it has to be overriding evidence. But the play on the field should have been called a catch. If it would have been called a catch, then it would have been called a catch in review.
What can I tell you?
Yeah, it was bad.
You know what cracks me up is just how terrible special teams is in the NFL level. And when I saw the ball like bounce off that dude's foot, he was trying to
be a tough guy.
It's unbelievable how stupid guys
are. Trying to be a tough guy. Trying to have the last push. He was trying to get the last push.
Yeah, you should be running away. You should be running to the sidelines.
Yes. But you don't know where to run when the ball is up in the air. I mean, it's a weird feeling. I've been part of that before.
You know, it's remarkable is just how dumb guys are coached in special teams.
No,
I shouldn't call the guys dumb because they're probably doing what they're coached to be doing. But I guarantee you, if I was coaching special teams, we would have some sort of signal immediately.
But what do you? Where
and
do
my
you go?
Players
where
would
do you
be
go?
Taught.
Where
well,
do you
first,
go?
First of all, what I would do is
like the call is Peter, Peter, Peter. That's the call. Well, on every team I've ever been on, it's been called Peter, Peter, Peter.
Yeah, we would practice that, and as soon as you would hear a call, you'd be sprinting to the sideline.
Which way?
Whatever the closest sideline is.
You understand.
You know, I would teach my guys to maybe lie flat on their backs and start rolling away. I don't know what I would do. I would tell them to get
the ball
away.
Hit them there, too.
You would just get away.
How do you get away?
As quickly as humanly possible.
You make a good point,
but here's what I would do.
When the ball is punted in the air.
I'll tell you what I would do.
Hold on. When the ball is punted in the air and you are blocking, you do not have vision on the ball.
Right. So stop blocking.
And go where?
Wherever. Let the guy fair catch it.
Should you retreat back to, I'm asking a good question. I mean, I'm asking a great question. Most special team coaches would probably say get out of bounds nearest, get
sure.
to the closest out of bounds. But what happened there, that was a pushing contest.
To be
that
real,
was a pushing contest you know that didn't need to happen.
You know what I'd really do? Is I'd have my guys line off the line of scrimmage. They would kick the ball just so I make sure the guy can't run for a first down. I got to protect against getting a first down.
Or a touchdown.
Yeah, I got to make sure the punter doesn't run with the ball. But as soon as I know he's not running with the ball and I got guys covered so he can't throw the ball, I would, as soon as he kicks the ball, I would have my players walk off the sideline, and I'd have the returner fair catch the ball. Unless I was trailing in the game and I needed to do something dramatic.
You know what, bro?
I would avoid all penalties. I would avoid injury.
Hey, man.
I would catch the ball, and I'd hand it to my quarterback, who makes $25 million a year.
Oh, man.
What was the average punt return, do you think, last night? 6 yards?
I don't know.
Four yards?
Darren Sproles had a huge one because he had a 14 or 15-yard return, and then he had a 15-yard face mask penalty.
Oh, the penalties on special teams are mind-blowing.
That was 30 yards, I think, netted.
All right, let's go. So, punting, returns. Average was 5.5 yards for the Falcons, and the average was 7.3 yards for the Eagles. That's the truth, Ruth.
Yeah, so
I would have my guys fair catch the ball, and I would guess that my $25 million a year quarterback is able to get 5 yards.
You don't look at it the right way, bro. I'm telling you, man.
I got it all wrong.
You do have it wrong.
Meanwhile, they lost.
But you won't back down. I can't believe.
Look at the penalties.
I'm just saying, D-Mac, you can't have your punt return unit not try to score a touchdown.
Here's what I would call it. First of all, I would have my first meeting of the year. I say, we are not the punt return unit anymore. We are the punt catching unit, and we are the first down prevention unit, and we are the punt catching units.
We are the team that's here to stop a fourth down conversion.
That's right.
Secure the football.
That's right. So we don't overreact to anything. We sit there off the line, and we make sure that little runt punter doesn't run for it. We double-team anybody who can go out for a pass so they can't throw for it under every circumstance. And then as soon as he punts the ball, we wildly run off the field, and we let the most sure-handed guy, who's going to be my highest-paid wide receiver, catch the ball. We're going to hand the ball to our quarterback who makes $25 million, and we're going to take our chances.
That's outlandish.
We're going to take our chances. We can get 5.3 yards or 7.3 yards. How many great punt returns have you seen that have been returned for a touchdown or a big return only to be called back because of penalties? But this will never happen in the NFL. It could possibly happen in college. But it'll never happen in the NFL because nobody thinks progressively in the NFL about anything. But the one play...
Doug Peterson thought progressively last night.
The one play that changed everything was a college play. Basically.
They ran a few college plays. They ran some razzle-dazzle, baby. And then last night also, man, we got to talk about this and get ready for it here in Denver, too, because it was an eye-opening experience to see so many of those players, especially those from Atlanta, coming up with cramps.
Yeah, because nobody's ready for football.
You know what, man?
Because preseason's a joke.
I hate to say it, but I would probably be more proactive with my offensive linemen and with everybody. I would make everybody on the team. I know it's going to sound ridiculous, but I would make everybody on the team the day of the game around, you know, we play at 2 o'clock, so the day of the game at 10 o'clock to get an IV bag,
just like Billions. Just get those IV bags, roll them right into the office.
That was after a late night.
We'll just recover well. Everybody on the IV bag. All right, we're off and rolling. The fire up at 5 o'clock. I know everybody's looking forward to that. We've got it ready for you, and we have Paxton Lynch news. I know he's gone, but we'll follow the story. Because we love the story. Paxton Lynch News, Big 3 is next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web. 303-790-2222, the phone number. SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
It's Big Al and D-Mac with the Big 3, presented by Sam's Number 3 Diner and Bar.
Story number one, let's have some fun with Paxton Lynch. Why not, right? Former quarterback of the Broncos, Paxton Lynch, had his second visit of the week. This time he tried out for the Detroit Lions. Alfred, by this time next week, will Paxton Lynch be with an NFL team?
I'm going to say no.
Wow. Wow. So a tryout with the Bills, a tryout with the Lions, and no, huh?
No, I don't think so.
Wow, that's harsh. He won't have guaranteed money. I mean, it'd be the sort of week-to-week thing. It'd be after week one. No, really?
I don't know if he has any more practice squad eligibility, but that's where
Practice squad?
Oh, absolutely. That's where he would,
goodness.
That's
wow.
where he belongs.
Okay, so not optimistic. I will say Paxton Lynch will find some sort of home. Gosh, you know what? Maybe you're right. Eh, you know what? You're probably right. No, I guess you're right. Bongos.
Three. Here we are. Friday before a Sunday game. Does Le'Veon Bell appear before Sunday in Pittsburgh? He has until Saturday night to appear in Pittsburgh to get his game check. Will he appear Saturday night and get his game check for Sunday and not play? Or do you think that this is going to be a protracted holdout? He can show up Saturday, still get paid.
Right, right.
And, you know, he's probably not going to play in the game, but he's going to get his paycheck.
Oh, man. Do you eat $800,000?
No.
Almost
$900,000? No, a million? No.
I will say yes.
Not a million.
He will not be there this week. He has come to terms with this, and he's going to eat it for 1 week as harsh. Because teams can always forgive it. There's ways around that.
No, you can't.
There's things they can do. I will say he will miss this week. What do you say? He will not show up tomorrow.
I think Le'Veon Bell shows up Saturday.
If he does, then what's this all been all about?
Oh, I mean, the holdout is still real. I mean, he's just not going to play in one game.
I say he's not there. You say he is.
Okay, bongos.
I'm fixing to find out. Bongos.
Three!
Alfred, talk to me about this weekend with the Rockies and the Dodgers. Thomas Hardy will join us in about 10 minutes to preview this matchup. But when you think of the importance, where do you put it?
Well, I think that it is it's paramount for us to get these next seven games. I know we have, 23? What do we have left? 23 games left?
I think it's less than that, but something around there.
Yeah, but I think that when you start talking about head-to-head matchups against opponents, I mean, that win-loss is a direct reflection on your record. No half games, and you got to look up and see what happened to the other person. Now, win the games that you have. And for that, I would say that these games are as important as any that they'll play the rest of the way. D-Mac, I just love the fact that we are in this situation, and I never want to be without this excitement of playing baseball this late in the year.
Okay, bongos.
Three! Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow had words, and of course we know that he's a aspiring Major League Baseball player, but until then, he's still an ESPN analyst for college football. He had some things to say about Jim Harbaugh.
I gotta be honest. Last week I was kind of shocked. I expected more from Michigan. I expected more from Shea Patterson. I expected more from their offense. And honestly, I thought it was kind of pathetic. I thought their effort was. I thought all of their recruiting, their talent, and that's the way you showed up against Notre Dame, who I also think is a little bit overrated. Like, you gotta give me more than that. You've been there. You've recruited your guys. Now this is your chance to make a statement, to show the type of coach you are, that you're worth all that money they gave you, that you're worth all of these trips to Paris and everywhere else, right? I think it's cool you take trips, but the most important trips is when you go get a W, big guy.
Tim, when that change happens and you go through puberty, it's going to be an awesome moment when your voice lowers a little bit and you just kind of calm down. He needs a little coaching in the broadcasting area. I mean, I get it. You want to be critical and everything, but easy, big fella. Somebody got in Tim Tebow's ear and said, listen, pal, you got to be a little bit more interesting on TV, huh?
Sorry about that.
I would tell you this.
Tim's always had kind of a high-pitched, sort of breathy voice. I mean, we know that. But it sounds weird when he's on blast. It's kind of funny to hear Tim Tebow say anything critical about anybody.
Well, the big games do not agree with Jim Harbaugh. And with all of the recruiting and all of the hype that surrounded Michigan going into the game, Tim Tebow was right about one thing. You got to show me something more than that, Michigan.
Oh, I guess. But, I mean, he's being critical of them taking trips to Europe, like, as if that's making them distracted from winning games.
Well, I mean, Tim Tebow is he's a college football analyst. He has things to say.
Yeah, but I think it depends on who the offensive coordinator is. I agree with you, Max. I think you need to change something, but you need to find a guy that fits your system and also fits to their strengths. Listen, Shea Patterson doesn't need to be under center turning around doing play actions. He's athletic. He's got these intangibles that you can't coach, you can't teach. We saw it last year at Ole Miss, right? So put him in the shotgun, put him at a two-minute, and let him do his thing. Play to the coach's strengths. We saw it last week at Florida with Felipe Franks. Finally, you had a coach play to his strengths. He had 5 passing touchdowns. It's amazing what coaching can do.
Get him, Tim!
Psycho Tebow. Tim Psycho Tebow.
I like it, though.
Oh, man.
It's amazing what coaching can do.
I say it all the time.
It's amazing what coaching can do.
Okay, Bongos.
It's amazing what coaching can do.
3.
I mean, I'm not saying he's wrong. It's just kind of funny to hear him say anything like that. Okay, lack of clear proof. Clear proof results in no cash for Julio Jones. Are you kidding me, Al? Are we back to this stuff all over again? I thought we were done with this, man.
First game.
I thought we were done with it. What happened?
He had the ball trapped on his right shoulder. And you can see clearly when he's going down that he bobbled it and then he brought it to his shoulder. And he slid out of bounds with it trapped on his shoulder, secured on his shoulder, and the referee said, no catch. They didn't have enough information to overturn the referee who said, no catch.
These referees got to learn something. You know what I used to love in arena football? They never measured for first downs in arena football. It was like, close enough. Let's go. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You've got to let some common sense and not over officiate. And if it's a catch, if it looks, you're taking away, oh, that's a catch. That's ridiculous. I'm watching it run. He did bobble it, but he contained it enough and fell down. Oh, that's certainly a catch. Now, that's just bad, man. You can't do that. The referee is over-officiating on the sidelines, and they blew it back behind the scenes. You blew it, NFL. You blew a lot of things last night, NFL. Sorry.
3.
By the way, the Eagles confirmed they did troll Tom Brady with the Philly special that they ran in the game.
Well, they admitted it. Yes, they said
about,
it. Yeah.
I'm talking about the one that they caught last night.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Excuse me. My husband cannot throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time, you know?
It was a complete ripoff of the Patriots play. It wasn't the Philly special. The Philly special has Nick Foles doing an acting job and moving up to the line. This was like the Tom Brady play. They said they absolutely ripped it off from the Patriots. They practiced it one time during practice, and they got it. Helped change the game. Turned it around. In terms of this weekend's action, we are going to be rocking in lower downtown. Thomas Harding from MLB.com to preview the Dodgers and the Rockies next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, game day's favorite light lager. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Come on now. It's going down. This ball's hit a long way again. That's number 30. Where will this one land? Top course again. Are you kidding me? Those aren't just home runs. Those are moonshots. Woo! Let's get it on. Down at Coors Field. Those horrible Dodgers are in town. And to preview this series is Thomas Harding, covering the Rockies for MLB.com. Thomas, how you doing, my friend?
I feel good. I feel clean. I'm honored to be speaking to you on a football Friday.
Yes!
My man!
How about that?
And we know Thomas Harding loves some football, too. So it's great, Thomas. But this series this weekend, man, is so important to us. We just have to address the elephant in the room, man. The Dodgers coming in here. What has to happen for us to have the kind of success that we need against the Dodgers?
Well, I think the first thing that has to happen is the Dodgers cannot be the elephant in the room. I mean, This is a team that the Rockies, last year when the Dodgers were seemingly 471 games above 500, the Rockies won the series with them last season. And they can play this team very well. They got to consider themselves, hey, we're here because we're in first place, not the elephant in the room, which is the L.A. Dodgers.
Thomas Trevor Story will not get the MVP, but should he be getting the MVP?
He should be under consideration for the MVP. I think there's no doubt about it. What he has done has made a huge difference to this team's offense, because over the course of the season, you're going to have ebbs and flows, slumps and hot streaks. Right now, this team is in first place in the National League West, and Nolan Arenado hasn't hit really for the last 14 games. And Trevor Story has picked up the pace with the home runs here lately, and a lot of other guys have also picked up the pace. But what I've seen from Trevor Story is the same thing I've seen over the years from Nolan Arenado. He has excellent defense at his position and power that you don't see out of other shortstops at that position. So he should be under consideration for MVP. Now, does this become a situation like last year where if you have two, first of all, Colorado Rockies have a hard time getting it because of the home road situation. But what happens if you have two guys that deserve MVP consideration? Do they split your vote?
Yeah, I tell you what, that's a great conversation to have. You know, if we're talking about a team that fields four former National League hitting champions, and then you're talking about a guy who's not in that conversation also being involved in an MVP conversation, I'm excited about that as well. But let me ask you this. What do you think about the Dodgers pushing back Kershaw so that he starts against the Colorado Rockies? That means that they're taking it like it's a big-time game as well.
Yeah, they're thinking of it as a big-time game. And if you look at the Rockies, remember when they backed up Tyler Anderson in the rotation? They set the rotation so John Gray and Kyle Freeland would pitch against the L.A. Dodgers. So you've got teams that are not looking like, one team is a favorite and one team is an underdog. It's how do we best combat this team that we've got to fight with down the stretch?
I love it, man. It's a clear game of chess being played by the managers weeks in advance sometime. I mean, it feels right, bro.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you're talking about two guys that have worked together, Dave Roberts and Bud Black, and guys who are close friends. I mean, my gosh, last year they were up for the manager of the year, and they were at each other, and they were both at, I think it was Dave Roberts' house for the announcement, okay? They're neighbors out there in San Diego, but it's funny, when a game starts, they are looking for ways to take advantage of each other. They don't mind making the other one look bad if they could make a move to win a ball game.
What do you think the with these four games against the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks? I'm not trying to panic here or anything. A lot of people have said, you know, are going nuts because there's plenty of season after these seven games. But what do you think the Rockies have to do in this seven game? Let's include it all as a series, the rest of the homestand. What do you think they have to go in this seven games to give them the best shot to win the division?
Well, I think a winning record in these seven games, I think, would be like really important. You know, okay. I mean, you would like to go 5-2, 6-1, 7-0. I mean, they went 3-0 against the Giants, but you want them to have a winning record. However, you look at the road trip that's coming up. They've got both these teams on the road. Yeah. They have played quite well at Dodger Stadium. They played poorly against the Diamondbacks until going out there the last time and really played well. So I think that, yeah, you want to win these games, but you really have to keep calm about it, because there's more baseball behind this, and there's more baseball against the teams
so
that you're fighting with.
I like what you're saying. It's a more rational sort of opinion. Come away 4-3 in these next seven games, and we're fine. And, you know, if you more or less take care of that type of business, you'll be okay. It just makes those games against Philadelphia and Washington. And by the way, how about the collapse with the Nationals? Oh, my goodness, that is something else. Which is great, right? That's the team you want to face at the end of the year.
Yeah, you don't necessarily want to face the Phillies for four games. But, hey, I think the difference between the Rockies and the Phillies is that the Phillies are where the Rockies were last year. You know, they're in it basically for the first time, and there's a lot that they don't really know. So you wonder when you get that far. Gosh, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. But when you get that far down in the season, you hope that makes a difference. As far as the Washington Nationals, I was absolutely screaming at the TV by some of the non-hustle non-thinking plays by Bryce Harper and some of the guys on that team. I was screaming at the TV the other day just watching them play against the Cardinals. It's really bad. I don't know if Dave Martinez can keep a job, but my question is that organization at the point where they need some major changes, whether it's in personnel or just in attitude from the top, because that's a bad team. The truth of the matter is that any win against these teams is like two games.
Yes.
You know, you gain that full game as opposed to a half game. That's why I love the end of the baseball schedule. I mean, I do wish that there were maybe two more teams in the major leagues where you could stay entirely in your division at the end of it.
Let me ask you this, Thomas. You know, you talked about Bryce Harper and some of the things that he hasn't done down the stretch. And earlier in the year, we had a conversation about Nolan Arenado and did the team do enough to satisfy him before his all-important year next year. Do you think that the Colorado Rockies have done enough already, even if things don't work out down the stretch, to let Nolan know that we're trying everything that we can to make sure that we're in the playoffs? Do you think that's enough that we've done as an organization to sign him to a long-term deal?
It's funny if I can have a little time to answer this one.
Go ahead, buddy.
I've studied how this team has operated. And there is one thing that's been clear to me is that the priority of showing him that they're going to do what it takes to win around him is not really what they care about. What they care about is this. Can your pitchers throw strikes? Can they get ground balls? And can you put away the ground balls? And basically what they're saying is that winning is a byproduct of that. And if Nolan Arenado, A, accepts the byproduct, then they've got that part taken care of. The other part that no matter what you do around here, I mean, you could bring him trinkets, you could bring him flowers. The question is, when he comes out, there are very few third basemen in the history of the game that have come out as a free agent at his level. I'm talking about offensively, defensively, what he does for a team in the clubhouse. The Bucks are going to be big. The question is, can and should the Rockies compete on that? And can and should Nolan Arenado take the top dollar there? There will be tremendous pressure to take that top dollar, because what happens when the next third baseman comes out? You know, there is that, as you know, in free agency too. So the thing the Rockies have to do what they do. Throw strikes, convert the outs, win close games, try to win the World Series and deal with that later. Not spend their time, offering love offerings to one player.
My man.
Great stuff, Thomas. By the way, very quickly, one name. Give us the name of somebody who's been called up that will have a major impact towards the end of the season here in this run.
Okay, the obvious name is Matt Holliday, actually, if you want to look at it, because he is starting more often than not, and I didn't think I expected him to be starting as much as he was. But I will say that if you look at what Ryan McMahon has done off the bench in the last 2 months, really. I mean, this guy has hit, I looked at the Rockies, because from July 15th, they have one of the best records of the major leagues. Most of those are comebacks. In that time, and Ryan McMahon hasn't been here the whole time, he's hit, after the seventh inning, he's hit .364 with three home runs.
Mm.
So what he has become is, remember what Seth Smith did at the end of the 2007 season? That's what Ryan McMahon has done this year.
Good stuff. Thomas, we'll talk to you later, my friend.
Stay clean, bro.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Thomas Harding from MLB.com. Ryan McMahon. Matt Holliday, the rest of the crew, gets it on tonight. Going to be an awesome night.
It's going to be off the chain.
Down in lower downtown. Football at 4, the turnaround that has been the Broncos. We'll go through some of the most significant positions, look where they were at this time, and where they are now next.